Coach Jeff Jackson.
Our total focus has to be on one thing and one thing only, because we still control our own destiny, you know, and we worked hard to finish in second to be able to play at home.
Jackson says he thinks they have to win to have a chance to be in the NCAA. The puck drops at 7 Saturday. Darren Pritchett calls it on our sister station, Z94.3.
The home of Notre Dame football, 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. It's the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Yes, stay sharp.
Coming to you from downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street, five-star dive bar with Evan Sharpley, Sean Stutt. Hey,
yeah,
all right,
all
for
right.
The back, all right. Getting crazy today, right here.
Coming in hot.
That guy looks like Golden Tate over there, is that? Show me the money. Did you see that video
awesome.
That he did last night? Golden Tate did both versions of the Jerry Maguire
what
Show Me the Money for his big new contract.
Yeah, it was big.
Evan or Golden's got a pretty unique personality.
Yeah,
you can testify to that firsthand.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat.
Yeah, he is. He absolutely is. Well, glad to be back.
$23 million guaranteed, huh?
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not a bad deal. I was like, I'm not a Giants fan, obviously. I'm a fan of another team in the division. So, like 2 days ago, I was feeling pretty good about what they're doing, but then they go out and it's like they're trying to show that we're not just waving a complete white flag.
How
I
about
guess.
The Brownies right
Golden
now?
Tate. Hey, you got to be feeling really good if you're a Browns fan.
I'm not a Browns fan, but I'm feeling pretty
I'm just
good.
Saying, if you're a Browns fan, you got to be feeling pretty good. You know, I'm going to be going over to Lafayette tomorrow for Penn versus Carmel semi-state. So do you
that'll
have any
fun?
What I'm really looking, and that'll tip off close to 3:45. It was originally listed as a 3:30 tip-off, but then we got word from the IHSAA yesterday. The game will not start before 3:45 because, you know, there's the 2A game before it, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of cutting down of the nets and their own celebration and trophy and all that kind of stuff.
Exiting out of the gym.
That's right.
Coming back in. Okay.
Exit to the left, enter to the right, whatever it happens to be. But, the thing that I'm – and we'll have that game from Lafayette rather than at Northside Gym here in Elkhart.
Right.
The IHSAA sent Penn all the way over to Lafayette. And they're also sending Lafayette Central Catholic in 1A to Northside Gym in Elkhart.
Why?
So
why are they doing that?
That's a very good question.
In that message they sent you on the time, did they let you know why that was the case?
They did not say, here is our explanation for our irrational decisions.
Okay.
So, but we'll have that game tomorrow on 96.1 WSBT.
How cool would it have been to have Penn and Northside Gym, though?
Oh, man. I mean, for
you might
for
have
a moment,
all of Elkhart County there.
I don't know about that, but
you might have. What are you going to do on a Friday night?
I think there would have been.
Or
well,
Saturday
afternoon. So that's okay.
Friday night.
That's okay. But the thing I need to know is I've been to Lafayette a handful of times. I know you've been there for football. Have you been there otherwise? Did you ever take a visit or anything like that to Lafayette?
I mean, through the recruiting process,
yeah.
But I didn't spend a lot of time
nothing
there.
Nothing big. I'm trying to figure out where are we going to eat at some point. I mean, that's the big thing, and especially when I've got Vince D'Addario with me. The question is
he a foodie?
Everything. Well, I don't know if he's a foodie, but he likes food. You know, probably more than you, he likes food, and especially he likes free food, and we're over there on station business, so.
I don't know if he likes food more than I do, because when I'm currently eating whatever meal I'm eating, and by the way, today is the Turkey Club wrap and soup or chili for $6 here at Five Star.
I'm glad you got that out there.
While
very
I'm
good
eating,
choice.
While I'm eating, I'm thinking of my next meal. When and what is it going to be?
Wasn't this kind of like dinner time for you since you've been up as long as you have?
Yeah, alarm went off at 3:15 this morning, so I'm not sure which meal I'm on right now.
Serving 8 different masters during the day. Well, we are here at Five Star Dive Bar. We'll remind you that next week there will be no show. We won't have Sports Beat or this show, Sean and Sharpley, Thursday and Friday, because it is...
Fill out your brackets.
Yep, that is it. It is wall-to-wall NCAA tournament basketball beginning at noon. And I, with the pregame stuff, they'll probably start a little bit before noon. Thursday and Friday, first two full days of the NCAA tournament. We'll have the play-in games Tuesday night, Wednesday night as well. So it is just about
on. One of my favorite times of the year.
Oh, absolutely. Let me ask you this.
Have you ever filled out a bracket just based on the uniforms?
I've never tried that.
It's actually pretty accurate.
Is it?
Like favorite color, mascot.
Just look at it straight off. I like this mascot better than this mascot.
Yeah.
Did you ever?
My wife did it, and she did pretty good.
Did she?
Yeah.
Interesting. Which do you like better, this week, conference championship week, or the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament?
Still the first 2 days.
It's got to be, right?
Still the first 2 days. I think a lot of people sometimes just kind of tune out the conference championships, and they're like, let's just get to the start of the tournament.
Well, and that's how I am, because it's like, and I heard one of the national guys kind of pose this question, and that's what made me think of it. And he was saying, well, everybody's still playing. Everyone's got something to fight for, whether it's seeding or the dark horse trying to get into the NCAA tournament, like Indiana, for example. Didn't quite work out for them yesterday. But I still don't buy that, because I still like the David versus Goliath, the first two round, the whole first weekend of the tournament, when you start to get these stories and these little darlings that we've never seen before. You know, Butler before they were Butler, Gonzaga before they were Gonzaga.
Yeah.
I mean, Loyola last year, obviously. George Mason a few years back. Those kind of teams.
What makes it so special.
Yeah.
And you see, I mean, those start to develop the first couple of days.
Yep. And so we will have all of that coming up. We will have the full NCAA basketball tournament right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We'll talk about more basketball coming up in a little bit. Let's get some football, though.
Okay.
What do you say? You want to hit a little football talk?
Sure. I mean, I don't think we go a show without talking about football.
Do we need your coffee?
No, I'm ready to go. Well, okay. Yeah, if I start snoozing off here.
I was going to say, you had your sandwich and your chili.
Is the food coma setting in? No, I'm good to go.
Okay.
Listen, I'm here for the 24-hour. You want to do a 24-hour show? We can make that happen.
I don't know about that. I mean, we have the right sponsors. I think we could make that happen.
So spring football. We got spring football going on right now. They're on spring break.
What are you talking about? It's spring break right now, and they'll be back next week. And, in fact, the media is going to get the first of six full practice viewings.
Special teams practice.
Next week.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a lot of special teams practice if they do that to us this spring, wouldn't it?
I know. But that's kind of usually what it is.
Let me ask you something. As a former player who's been to these practices and who's also been on the other side and been dissected at practice, how have you watched practice over the last few years?
Well, what's funny is, you know, when I was working on the media side of things, you know, you're given, an allotted time to watch.
Yeah.
You don't get to see anything.
Well, I mean,
we're going to watch stretching.
When you've got one of those 45-minute windows, you definitely don't.
So you got the stretching, you've got the move the field, you're going to get to watch a couple of maybe position type of drills. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really get to see too much, so... You know, when you're in your write-up, then it's like, man, this guy did a really good job on his high knees. Come on. I mean, man, he's really flexible. You know, that's going to really lend towards him having a success.
They sprinted across the field. They did backpedals across the field.
How many different times can you say these guys look really good in shorts and shoulder pads? So, yeah. I mean, and that's the difficult part is, you know, really getting a good feel for what the spring entails. So I hope you're able to see a little bit more. You know, when you have access to a whole practice, you can see some 7-on-7s. You can see some teams. You're able to usually see a little bit more than just that given stretch. And from a player standpoint, usually what we would do is we'd try to make it as awkward and weird as possible. I mean, like during stretch lines, you know, what could we do weird to maybe, I don't know, not that we were reading the stories afterwards, but, you know.
But you're aware that people are up there watching you, right?
Of course we're aware that, you know, the media has, the first eight periods or something like that. Okay, well, we're going to give them a little bit of a show here for the first eight periods.
Show how crazy we are.
I think for a while we would start, jersey switches. It was a tradition. I don't know if they still do that or not.
Haven't noticed that.
I don't know if I think it was either the last practice of spring ball or the last practice of fall camp, one of the two. we would come out, and of course that would drive the media crazy too, because now they're trying to look at, okay, well, who is this guy?
That's not Evan Sharpley.
If he's the second or third string guy, we have absolutely no idea who he is now if he's wearing the wrong number.
Why is Golden Tate wearing 13?
I don't think he wore my jersey.
Oh, he never did.
No, I don't think so.
All right.
Well, when you watch every spring, there's always, kind of talking about underdogs and media darlings and whatever, there's always a couple guys who really make a big name for themselves in the spring. But that doesn't always necessarily
cover over. It doesn't, no.
Yeah. So how is, again, someone who's been through it on both sides, how do you sort of look and determine, okay, this either has a chance to carry over, or, you know, this is just another spring fling? Whatever.
Well,
kind of
I think we all, you know, now that, and for me too, but in the media, and then now me being kind of aside from the process of actually playing, you fall into that trap quite a bit. But it is a different mindset. There are guys, though, that have been able to assert themselves into more of a starting role, and that has translated into, you know, more playing time in the fall and a bigger role. But there's also been guys where, you know, there's a bunch of articles written on how this, he could be the next big thing, and it doesn't pan out. So I think you take it with a grain of salt just based on how it is year in, year out. You're going to have your guys that are going to really put their foothold in a certain spot. So it's important as far as development is concerned, you know, and getting some of the younger guys acclimated to the process. But for guys that are really in positions where they're going after and competing, I think most of the time you have a pretty good feel. There are sometimes surprises. You know, I don't think we would have said, you know, sitting where we are right now a year ago, based on the spring when we were talking about Ian Book and Brandon Wimbush, that Ian Book would have been the starter by, you know, midway through the season,
right,
and really have the season that he had. I don't think a lot of people would have predicted that. I think we knew going in that both guys were going to play, but to have the success that he had, I don't know if we would have predicted that. So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It is 11 minutes after 12 o'clock. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, coming to you from Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street, in the former State Theater. So let's go back. I think we talked a little about Phil Jurkovec last week. We probably talked more about Ian Book and kind of where he needs to go throughout this spring. Let's talk a little bit about Jurkovec, because again, we spent most of the time sort of, when we did talk about him last week, it was about his mechanics and delivery and all that kind of stuff. We had a couple questions on SportsBeat this week that
you're going to ask those to me?
That I'm going to throw to you right now, because they deal with the quarterback position. So here's
Why
a guy.
Why do we always talk about the quarterback?
Why is that?
I don't know.
Interesting. So Phil Jurkovec spent last year as the scout team quarterback. He's really getting integrated into the Notre Dame offense for the first time at full tilt this spring. And a two-pronged question, and I'll take them one at a time. And this came from a listener. So do you think Phil Jurkovec is ready for the big stage?
No. But I don't know if he has to be ready for it. I mean, once you're kind of thrust into it, you're
going to... still the number two.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to prepare like you are. And I would assume in his head he's going to think that he is. But it's hard to replicate, you know, being the guy, being the number one quarterback, and then playing at a high level consistently for, you know, a football program like Notre Dame. So to say you're ready for it, I don't know if anybody's really ready for it. And once you get into that situation, you may be faking that you're ready for it for most of that time too. You know, you
and
don't want
to. You kind of have to.
You
right?
don't want to let on that you're like, man, you know, this is. I'm a little nervous and scared, and you know that's part of the game though. But it means you care. To say I think he's ready for that right now, probably not. But I don't necessarily think he has to be.
If I asked you the same question about Ian Book a year ago, what do you think you would have said?
No, but based on the opportunities that he had when he did get in there and play, you know, kind of subbing in for Brandon Wimbush the previous year, you could tell, and really when you're looking in his eyes, it didn't look like the moment was too big. And I think that's why a lot of fans in general have gravitated towards him, because he never seems to really be rattled.
He carried himself, especially on the field, with a lot of confidence.
Absolutely. But what's been interesting is in a few of the post-game interviews, you know, he was like, man, you know, I'm the quarterback for Notre Dame, and it's kind of strange to be out there, and you have some nerves when the game gets going, and I think it humanizes it a little bit more. But, I mean, that's what these guys are. They're 18, 19, 20-year-old young men who, I mean, they bleed like we do. When a guy hits them, it hurts the same as if someone would come up here and hit you and me.
Well, I don't know, like when he did become the quarterback and he ended up being the one who was standing there at the press conferences in the post game, just watching some of those videos and seeing him talk, I don't know that he really fully comprehended how different that was going to be for him when he had to stand up there and answer to everything at the end of every game and during the week and just the whole thing.
I can speak personally to that. I mean, there's a lot more responsibility on your shoulders. You know, when you're the quarterback, it starts and stops with you, you know, whether there's success or there's not. And, you know, the head coach can take some of that too. But ultimately, you know, you're the guy out on the field calling the shots.
Yeah.
And whether you like it or not, and that's why a lot of guys play the quarterback position, is it inherently is a leadership position. You know, a lot of the great teams over the course of football history, they are led by great quarterbacks, led by great leaders that are quarterbacks. And, you know, your team looks to you in those tough times. So, but it is, you know, it's kind of a wake-up call the first time you're up there and you're like, there's a lot going on here. This is, it's me and a lot of reporters. And, you know, if the game went well, then everybody's saying and patting you on the back and saying great job. And if it doesn't go very good, there are a lot of fingers that are pointed at you. So,
yes, sir.
And that's why you have to really, I mean, you have to be pretty even keeled. You don't want to get too high with the highs or too low with the lows in that situation.
So then the other question that, and again, this came from a listener. The first one was, is Djurkovic ready for the big stage? The second one is, do you think he could replace Ian Book by midseason?
Are you a betting man?
I am not, but
okay,
me either.
But I would put a lot of good money on that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and how can we tell at this point? Because again, this is a guy we only got to see a handful of reps last fall. We haven't got to see him since last fall camp, essentially. Well, with the exception of the one really quick, just watched some of his throwing. I mean, there's no way we can tell, I don't think, right now.
I would say that Notre Dame's season would be in dire straits if that is the case. That would mean
nothing.
That would mean Sean, that was good. I like that. I would say that the season would be going south very quickly if we saw a lot of Phil Djurkovic by midseason.
To me, it just comes back to the
unless
fact
it's
that,
in a cleanup role.
Yeah, well, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I mean, we would all, I think, like to see that kind mm-hmm. of thing where it would be in cleanup role. But I mean, it comes down to the fact that everyone, the backup quarterback being the most popular guy on every roster. We haven't even seen the guy on the field yet.
I think part of it too is, I mean, he's a 4 or 5 star guy coming out of high school. There's a lot of accolades. The expectations are very high. And if you look really at Ian Book's recruitment, it was
a lot different.
It was very much the opposite. You know, mm-hmm. it was a guy that you kind of flew under the radar. It was somebody that I think, you know, at some points, if you really are following recruiting, would be, not that he is, because I think on this show once I read my write-up of him, he, you know, could be looked at as a roster filler, a guy just in case. I didn't think that, you know, but there are some people I think that could say that. So I think there's kind of that, you know, juxtaposition between a guy who's coming in as a really a sure thing and someone you weren't really sure whether or not he was even going to play.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I think when you look at it, like when you look at Ian Book and what he needs to do to improve his game now, it's a lot different than what Brandon Wimbush needed to do last year and into the fall to improve his game and take the next step.
When you're talking about leadership instead of you need to complete more, you know, a higher percentage of passes, that's a good problem to have.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So then another question was about Darnell Yule. And should I read this whole thing? I sent you this other question. It's pretty long.
You can if you
detail.
Want to.
I mean, it essentially has to do with guys like Darnell Yule, the strength and conditioning staff.
Player development,
working with
basically.
Him and player development. They've moved him from one position to the next. And the question is Notre Dame, as a staff from top to bottom, coaching, strength and conditioning, and the whole thing, doing everything they can to help kids like this so that they can be able to play and contribute on the team in some fashion?
I would say, again, as
a player who's been through this.
I would say no doubt that they always have the best interests of the kid at heart. But, you know, they're also looking at, you know, where could he play? Where could he provide depth? So those are questions that are I think, asked quite a bit. And it's tough for me to answer that question specifically because, of course, I will be, you know, biased in talking about the time period in which I was there versus where they are now. So, I mean, you talk about updates within the program, within player development and performance. You have players now being tracked by GPS units when they're practicing. Yeah. We did not have access to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have as far as, you know, a couple of guys who struggled with like sleep apnea and not being able to rest or sleep enough and recover, they were able to help with that. I don't think there was a case when I was there, at least I don't remember where we were focusing on that. You know, most of our workouts we had were early in the morning, and that was because our coaching staff liked to be up in the morning. I don't like to be up in the morning, Sean, okay? So my best workouts were not at 5:30
in the morning.
Deep
down, does anybody
really? I don't know. Those are the evil, weird people of this world.
Right.
You know, and then also to the, you know, the food side of things, and now they have training table right there at the Goog. You know, for us, when we get out of practice, you know, practice would get done at 7 or 8 o'clock. If you had treatment to get done, whether it was icing, stim, you know, some type of compression, whatever it was, and then change, sometimes you're hustling to get over to South Dining Hall because North Dining Hall would close early mm-hmm. to be able to get some food. That's not an issue now because a lot of these meals are prepared. There's recovery, all of that. So I would say the advancements that have taken place even in the last 10 years have been top-notch. And you look at the facilities now that are being upgraded, the weight room, all of those different things. You know, within the weight room, just, you know, measuring the velocity of how fast the bar moves versus we're going to put 500 pounds on here and see if you can even lift it. Now we're going to say how fast are you moving this bar. So there's a lot more data that's involved. So I know that the staff is doing their due diligence to try to get them, you know, on the field in a specific role that is to their strength. You know, even within the nutrition side of things, whether it's adding weight or losing weight or gaining muscle, you know, and it's not to throw anybody under the bus, but, you know, with our nutritionists, it usually was, make sure you're not taking these supplements.
Yeah.
You know, it was more of a no.
But that's a good point, too, when you look at, you know, what happened at Clemson.
Yes.
During the season.
And that, you know, that is important at the same time. But, you know, I think what you're seeing is a more individualized approach now, even though you have 100 guys. I mean, it's very hard to manage that number and look at GPS and sleep and nutrition, all of those things with a team of that size. You know, it's easier to do, and I say easy, but, you know, it's more manageable with teams that have smaller roster sizes. But when you get into a team like a football team, I mean, there are a lot of things at play. And, you know, I think that at times some guys, whether it's certainly not purposeful, but maybe can get lost in the shuffle of the development side. But ultimately, to answer your question, I know I said to start, I 100% believe that, you know, the players, their development is number one priority.
Well, and I just think that because each of these last few years, we're sitting here and you've got to get to 85 and they're over the limit on certain. And by the time fall camp rolls around, you have to
always
be down.
Always seems to work out.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, but if you're going to stay on the 85, and I guess that's part of my point, if you're going to stay on the 85, it is in the staff's best interest to do everything in their power to figure out some kind of role for you
mm-hmm.
because you're taking up a spot, and in some cases, other guys are going to have to go someplace else. I mean, you look at all these different position switches that we've talked about. Avery Davis, you can go to C.J. Procise, Jafar Armstrong, Drew Tranquil, on down the line. I mean, that's in part they're trying to find what each of these guys does mm-hmm. best and within the restraints of roster limits and the team figure out how they can help the team the best.
Roster limits and depth, and you know, I mean, we can talk about the dark side of this too. Is it's also not uncommon at programs where you get run off.
No, that's very true.
You know, if you're trying to get to that specific number of mm-hmm. Of scholarship players, and maybe you're close to that, and a position switch might be, you know, the tipping point of I'm leaving, you know, as a player. You know, I've never been a part of that type of conversation. I mean, I contemplated leaving a couple of times and was convinced by my quarterback coach at the time, Ron Paulus, to stay at Notre Dame. So, you know, it wasn't that I was getting run off by any means, but that's a very influx type of thing that happens quite often that I think a lot of times maybe those stories aren't necessarily public. A lot of people don't know how those transpire.
Well, and I think sometimes these guys get offended by, well, you don't want me to play this position, that kind of thing, where, I mean, if you look at it on the other side, the fact that a coach is coming to you and say, hey, what do you think about trying this, because we think that maybe it could give you the best chance to be on the field more, to help the
team.
As
long as you're not buried in the depth chart.
Well, yeah, and that's got to be the conversation.
It's got to be the conversation is, yeah. What's the end game here? Is it for me to be a starter, or am I just going to always be a guy that's second or third?
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll talk a little Pro Day. That's coming up at Notre Dame next week. Pro Day Combine. Type stuff, and we've got some basketball
Sean, you're running the 40?
I will not be running
Man,
the 40.
Come on.
I'm trying to get Rich Eisen out here and see what we can do.
You guys go head-to-head?
That's right. I've decided I will not be running the 40 or doing bench next week.
Oh, what events are you doing then?
Well, I'm three-cone shuffle is on the table.
Oh, all right.
It's a wait-and-see kind of situation, though. It is 12:25. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. We're at Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. John and Sharpley, the number time lunch coming your way. Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street. What about Reliable Roofing? Do you have anything to tell us about?
I do. They did some work for me at my house.
Yeah.
And usually it's been a very rainy February.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? No leaks this
year. Very good.
That's awesome.
Very good.
Yeah, so they do both commercial and residential roofing. They've got a 50-year warranty on their shingled roofs. And as we've talked about, it is getting close to that time of the year. The weather, hopefully, is going to turn, and it's going to be nice. So a lot of people are going to be thinking about getting the roof.
It looked like it for a couple days, and I think it's actually supposed to get nice again tomorrow. So
I hope so. Today was a little bit colder than I had liked.
Yeah.
But the last 2 days have been nice. The door at the gym at Sharpley Training, we opened it up.
Nice.
We haven't been able to do that in
then you closed it back up today.
In 4 months.
Yeah.
Put smiles on people's faces.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't forget about Beef O'Brady's of Granger as well, where game time meets family time at the corner of State Road 23. So Notre Dame's NFL Draft Pro Day is next week. The Combine in our rearview mirror, that was last month down in Indianapolis. So you've got many of the draft hill guys for the Fighting Irish that are going to go through Combine-style workouts, the bench press, the 40 time, the three cone, and all that. So my question, Evan, is what value do you place on pro days? And we're talking about these specific ones where you've got guys from a school that are working out in their own environment on their campus. What value do you place in that?
I think it's a really good opportunity for the non-combine guys, that weren't invited there to showcase what they can do. Ultimately in shorts and t-shirt.
Yeah.
So, there's some value to it. I think overall, I'm going to say it's a bit overplayed and a bit overhyped. The film, it's not going to lie. The film's not going to lie. The interview process when you're going in and you're talking one-on-one with some of these GMs and scouts, what your coaches are going to have to say as far as your work ethic is concerned, I think is very important. But it's one more opportunity for the scouts and the GMs to get a up close and personal look at what you can do. It is a very controlled environment, though.
I mean, and that's...
You shouldn't, if you're a quarterback, you really shouldn't. You shouldn't have an incomplete pass unless a guy drops a football.
Yeah, exactly.
You really shouldn't. Okay, if you're running out routes on air, again, if you're a receiver, the drop is on you. I mean, it's there's nobody covering you. You're not getting hit. So a lot of these, and I think that's the knock on some of this is, it's not actually football. I mean,
no.
There are data and there are points that people are mm-hmm. looking at. You mentioned, the three cone drill and pro agility and 40 yard dash. I mean, those are things that people consider, but once they get done, they're probably going to go flip on your film and say, what this dude would do on the field.
Yeah. Cause I remember 2 years ago when Deshaun Kizer was there doing his workout and Mike Mayock, who's now the general manager of the Raiders, he was there for the NFL Network, and he would almost always show up when he was at the NFL Network. It'll be interesting to see if he's there next week, because a lot of NFL teams do come. But I remember I got a chance to interview him for a few minutes afterwards, and all he essentially could say, and he just kind of kept repeating about Deshaun Kizer, because the questions were about his accuracy and could he sort of improve his stock, and he just said, well, it's very scripted.
It is.
And that's all they kind of kept going to. It's very scripted, not necessarily impressed or whatever one way or the other. And then I heard him on Dan Patrick today saying that the biggest benefit in his mind to the combine, or not necessarily to the combine or pro day, is that if you're looking at a quarterback, you just want to at least be able to see them throw in person, mm-hmm. so you can get a better feel for how they actually throw. Not necessarily accuracy and all those different things, but look at what their arm action and arm strength looks like in person.
I think that's fair. I think you can do more to hurt your stock than to improve it.
Yeah.
You know, if you go out there and you are missing badly, they're going to be like, dang, I mean, there's no defense, there's no rush, and he's not able to complete a pass. But to be able to interact with them, and a lot of times, you know, the actual pro day is not run by Notre Dame individuals or coaches.
Yeah, they've got NFL guys.
Yeah, they're NFL
there.
Guys. So, you know, how do you respond to coaching, you know, the different drill sets that they may give you? But ultimately, the guys know what to expect. You know, it's not really outside of the realm of things they aren't prepared for. So it's to a large extent, a dog and pony show.
Well, and I mean, a guy like Julian Love is an example, and the Manti Te'o was in the same boat a few years back where Manti needed to have a better 40 time, mm-hmm. and, you know, guys are going to cut weight, essentially, to get every ounce off them they can. So, I mean, for Julian Love, I mean, is it really going to help his stock that much if he runs a couple tenths faster in the 40?
No. I mean, I really don't think so. You know, what he's been able to do on the field, I think his play speaks for itself. Ultimately, would he like to go out there and run a better 40 time? Sure. I don't think it's going to have a direct, you know, effect on whether or not it's going to boost him a couple of spots.
Yeah.
You know, these teams are going to look at, you know, where do we need, what teams need a cornerback like Julian Love, mm-hmm. versus, okay, you know, this is going to mean a slot here and there and maybe a money line. I don't think it's going to be like that.
All right. Okay, let's turn the page a little bit and get into some basketball. Notre Dame men's basketball season ended earlier this week with a second-round loss to Louisville in the ACC tournament. So I'm going to give you one word to describe the season Notre Dame just had. You can explain it after the one
All right.
word, but what would be the one word that you think sums up the season the Irish
You ready
just
for
had?
This word?
I'm ready.
It was nightmarish. It was like a bad dream, and you're hoping to wake up, and then you realized you weren't dreaming.
No?
It was real life. How was that? Was that good?
That's very true. Mine is just frustrating. And
yeah, that was another one I had, too.
Frustrating nightmare. I mean,
there we go.
There's just no way around it. It was frustrating
tough.
For everybody concerned to see the kind of season in year number 19 of Mike Bray. It just did not resemble anything that we've seen
so
in the previous 18.
I had a listener I ran into,
okay.
and he asked me this question. He says, do you think Notre Dame would part ways with Bray, or is he going to end up there and retire at Notre Dame?
Whew.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
No, and I mean, I think that what's interesting to me about the way he set this thing up, and I started thinking about this, I think it was over the weekend I watched the 30 for 30, the I Hate Christian Laettner,
mm-hmm.
and you've seen it.
Solid.
And I mean, I think it's a really good, I mean, 30 for 30 always does some good stuff, but I mean, that's like right there in the wheelhouse of, I would put it in the top five of the stuff they did, but I mean, there's a couple times
we
where
should have a rapid fire on that sometime. Top 30 for 30s.
That'd be a good one. then it'd force us to think a little bit. But he was part of that coaching staff when Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley and Grant and those guys were there at Duke. Brian Davis, and the Brian Davis thing is a whole different story. But I mean, so it's interesting to me because, like, just imagine, one, what Duke would be if Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett were going to be there for the next 3 years, not just this year, what that Duke program would look like. But then
it's a foregone conclusion,
yeah,
though, that they're
but then
not.
I go back, and it's like you don't see those groups of four together like that, or the, mm-hmm. the groups there for 4 years, obviously, anymore, because one and done, and just even before one and done, you still have guys coming out. You don't see groups stay together like that. And what Mike Bray has done, part of that kind of has to go back to that time when he was still coming up as an assistant coach, where you did have all four guys together. And it's almost like his own money ball, you know, like his market mm-hmm. inequity with the analytics.
We got to get four-year players.
Yeah, being able to have those guys.
Or senior contributors.
Yeah, yeah. We've beaten it to death, but you obviously did not have that with this team this year. It was so far off the skew of what he traditionally has done here at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a couple guys go away and it's panic mode.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difficult part is, you know, and each coach builds a program differently, but, you know, to be able to have a couple of guys, younger guys you potentially could lean on is important, as we've seen at a couple other programs.
Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, so based on your experience watching this Notre Dame basketball program over the last several years, what are there maybe two things that surprised you the most about what you saw?
Well, I mean, number one is you know, losing a couple guys and how greatly it affects the outcome of the whole season. And I want to say we saw that maybe a couple years ago. And really, if we're looking at the broad scope, in the last 10 years, there's been a lot of success. It's been a very steady program.
Mm-hmm.
But the couple of years where they've struggled, it's been, whether it's been a transfer, whether it's been an injury or two, that has led to, you know, a decline as the year has gone on. The teams that have been very successful, they've stayed healthy and they've had really good senior leadership and production.
Yeah.
Not a lot of times you're pointing to, okay, wow, that freshman really stepped up big. That's been really hasn't happened, I guess I would say.
Yeah, it really hasn't. I mean, it's been far more the exception than anything, because it's all been about building up to, by the time you get to that junior year, now you're ready to step into the shoes and be the man. You're more a role player, even as a sophomore, let alone a freshman. And they didn't have, I mean, John Mooney obviously stepped up in a big way. We saw that. But you just didn't have that killer guard, you know, who was going to go out there and take control of a game in and out. And I think, because my two things were lack of an offense.
Yeah.
You know, again, that we're used to seeing, and that played a big part of it.
My second one was just overall how poorly they shot the whole year. And whether it needed to be a senior or a freshman, I mean, these guys have been hooping their whole lives, so you would hope that somebody would get hot at some point.
That's what's weird. Leszczewski in the first half against Georgia Tech before he got injured, we saw that from him the other day. I mean, that's the kind of thing that Mike Bray thought Leszczewski could bring this team. But again, as a freshman, it's hard to sit here and analyze, because just what you said, and I know Darren Pritchett has talked about this before as well, because these guys grow up shooting, and it doesn't seem like shooting should take a night off just because you happen to be a freshman rather than a sophomore or a junior.
That's how I would feel, too. I mean, but it's, you know, maybe it's the speed of the game. It's adjusting to X, Y, and Z within the college lifestyle and a college program. You're not in high school now. You know, each guy coming from these college programs were probably the big fish, and now they're in a bigger pond, and they're not the big fish anymore. So I think that plays into it a little bit. But you would hope, right? I mean, You've been playing basketball, organized basketball, probably since you're 7, 8, 9 years old.
Right.
You know, the hoop is still at 10 feet. You know, it's kind of that Hoosier scene where you're walking and saying, guys, it's the same. We'll go measure. Let's go measure it. It's the same. You know, here's your spot right here that you got to get to. Let's make these shots. So I think ultimately, though, and, you know, I listened to you and Tom Noy talk a little bit about this, too, is let's hit the reset button now.
It's time
to move forward.
Yeah.
You know, as bad as it was, let's take our losses here. Let's learn from it. Let's move forward to what's next, and we got to get better. And I think everyone knows that.
And I mean, this team, again, it lacked some of the chemistry that we've seen from Mike Bray teams. But I think, again, part of that comes from the fact that with so many of the freshmen being in there at one time, it didn't show on the floor just with the operation of the offense, and you didn't see that kind of chemistry. So now, just what you said, reset button, we step aside, we come back next year, we've got all these guys together. So that's the one thing that you have.
Let's build on that positive.
Yeah.
As bad as this was, let's build on that.
But I mean, just look at in the Big 12 right now, you've got Texas Tech and Kansas State up at the top of the conference. That does not happen very often. Because, like, even when Kansas has shared the Big 12 championship after they finally got shut out this year, those two teams were not up at the top. But what those two teams are built on is essentially going back to Mike Bray and his philosophy is they've got a lot of seniors mm-hmm. on those teams who are major contributors, and that's part of why they're up at the top of the Big 12 Conference this year. So, I mean, you're going to have some seniors next year. Mooney's going to have to keep doing what he did, and obviously you've got to have...
A couple other guys are going to have to step up.
A lot different kind of contribution from a guy like T.J. Gibbs, who I think a lot was... counted on this year, and we just didn't see enough
and especially of what we saw when you're last in a year. Conference like this. I mean, when you're down,
can't afford to have a lot of off nights in the ACC.
It could get real bad real fast.
That's absolutely right. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, we've got some more basketball talk coming. Also, Charles Barkley was on the Dan Patrick Show yesterday, and I'm going to play for you. I don't know if you heard any of that, but Dan Patrick actually replayed the whole... I think he had Barkley on in the first hour. They replayed the whole thing in the third hour. And I've got a bite for you that I want you to hear. And also, the question that everyone wants the answer to. Who is the biggest chucker when it comes...
Good question.
...to basketball? Is it Evan Sharpley? Is it Tom Noy? Tom had his say earlier this week. So we will answer that question coming up. The bigger chucker.
It's a no-brainer.
That's right. And I think they're both claiming the crown, essentially. So we'll do that when we return. Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Johnny Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, back live. Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart. We've got about 10 minutes to go in the show here. And the conversation, I mean, this is kind of an ongoing conversation with Evan Sharpley and Tom Noy.
Mr. 45%,
that's
baby.
That's right. And as you said, he co-hosted a couple days of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat with me earlier this week. And the question that we started it is, who is the biggest chucker?
Wide open. I was wide open underneath. I had 3 inches on that guy. So you two were hogging the ball.
Me? It wasn't me. I never even saw the ball. All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot. You're a chucker.
Chucker.
That's right. Every time you get the ball, you shoot.
I can't believe you called me a chucker. No way I'm a chucker. I do not chuck. Never chuck. Never have chucked. Never will chuck. No chuck.
You chuck?
Kramer, am I a chucker?
Oh, you're a chucker.
God, I'm a chucker. All these years I've been chucking, you never told me?
Well, it's not an easy thing to bring up.
So I'm getting the word from out here in front of us from your wife. She's saying absolutely 100% Evan.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't see me play in high school. She saw me play in a rec basketball game.
Uh-huh.
And we went into halftime with a 32-28 lead, and I had 30 of our team's points.
And all zero assists.
All three-pointers. Well, no. There couldn't have been. No, there definitely were. They assisted me.
Oh,
is that
okay.
What you're saying?
Yeah, well, you
I'm
know.
Not I'm not the James Harden style.
As
here.
Long as you're filling the hole, that's all that matters,
that's
right?
That's all that the team really cares
so
about.
So who are you? Are you more Steph Curry or are you more Thompson? Clay Thompson.
Probably more Clay.
More Clay. Catch and shoot all the way.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I've added a little bit of the Steph recently.
A little more flair?
No, just if I have to handle the ball, if we don't have that on our team, then I'll do that. But,
okay.
But normally it's, I'll come set me a screen. I'll go sit in the corner and wait. And
reputation has both of you guys walking in the door and putting it up right away.
Putting it up, but also making it.
We're working on, we talked about it. We need like a street hoop out here in downtown this summer.
Yeah, I mean,
get both you guys.
I heard this too, and Tom made a good point. It can't be one with the double rims, and it's got to be a day where there's no wind.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we could do it inside here.
We can't control that.
Yeah,
how about that? There is enough roof here we could put up.
I think we'd be able to make that.
I don't know. The TVs might pay the price, though.
Not with the way that Tom and I shoot.
That's true, as long as they go through the hole, my man. That's very true. Okay, so. So we've solved that at least for now. But
I vote me.
I think there's something in the works for we've got to have some kind of 3-point shooting.
Or
contest.
We just need to get on the same team and play a little bit here.
I mean that could be double trouble right there.
Well, here's the deal.
I got a feeling Tom would pass at least a little bit more.
I still find the open guy. Yeah. Oh, no doubt about that. What we would need, though, I think Tom and I would need is 3 role players that knew they were not going to shoot.
That they were not going to touch the ball at all.
Just
set the pick and get out of the way.
Set the pick. Make sure you rebound on defense and outlet it to us.
All right.
And we will win.
I think I might pay to watch that. All right, 12:52. So now, as I promised, Charles Barkley on the Dan Patrick Show earlier this week, and an interesting conversation came up. So let's just go into that right away.
Oh, Dan, let me tell you something. I am never watching soccer again. Let me tell you something. I have made up my mind. I have given soccer every opportunity, even though America sucks at it, except for the women. The women are great, but the men suck at it. But let me tell you something. My dream come true would be for a fan to come out on the field and hit me. That would be, like, my dream come true. And let me tell you something, what pissed me off, number one, homeboy just flopped, but also the other team didn't beat the hell out of the spectator.
So that was Aston Villa. Yeah, Jack Grealish, I think, is his name. He got hit from behind.
I don't care if his name is Buster Douglas. If a fan come on the court, all the players on both teams, let's take, for example, Bill Laimbeer.
Okay.
Who I never liked. I like him now. We're cool. But I never liked. If a fan hit Bill Laimbeer, we're in the same fraternity. I can't let a fan come on the court and hit him. And so those soccer players who let that man get hit, and then this dude is kissing to the crowd. He wouldn't have been kissing to the crowd if I had got my hands on him. That's my dream come true for a fan to hit me.
So what you're saying is, if Bill Laimbeer was attacked by a fan and you were playing...
All 10 guys on the court should beat the hell out of that spectator. Because, Dan, we're all in the same fraternity. I don't wish any ill toward any NBA player. But if somebody hit Bill Laimbeer just out of being in the brotherhood, we should whoop the hell out of that fan. And when this soccer player, number one, he stayed on the ground. And these other guys didn't hit, his teammates didn't even beat this guy down. That pissed me off so bad. So I am officially boycotting soccer forever.
The always entertaining Charles Barkley. It was in England, I think, where this nut job runs out of the stands. Have you ever had anything even remotely close, guys come on the field or anything like that?
I had. So we were at University of Pittsburgh. We were playing at Heinz Field, and Shaq Evans was a freshman receiver who ended up transferring and going to UCLA.
Right, right.
He started climbing into the stands to fight one of the fans.
Really?
I had to pull him back down.
So the fan didn't come out.
Correct.
He was going into the stands to the fan.
Yeah,
so this was kind of like the Russell Westbrook stuff from earlier this week.
Yeah, it would have been similar to that, where it was chirping from the fan. But I had never experienced anything where a fan actually came down. It was kind of the opposite, where Shaq was getting into it with one of the fans that was right down there, like right on our bench.
Man, what about? Because I know West Virginia, when you were there for baseball, that has kind of a reputation.
It does have a reputation.
Any good stories from there?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very, I wouldn't necessarily say, I don't know if hostile is the right word, but I was playing first base at the time, and West Virginia's fans and their side was over on the first base side, because they're in the first base dugout.
Uh-huh.
And man, I was getting called everything.
Oh, I can imagine.
You know, they kind of crossed the line and talked about my mom a little bit too. So I ended up hitting a home run to put us ahead by, I think, 3, and it was a laser. You know, I don't think it got too high off
all
the ground.
All of your confrontations have always ended with you hitting a home run, right?
Well, no, actually, no, not all, but this specific one, so I'm actually going to talk about it. If it ended in a strikeout, it wouldn't be a very good story.
True.
So I ended up hitting a home run and, you know, rounded the bases. I get to home plate and take my helmet off, and I just pointed at the fans that were yelling at me, got the home run ball, signed it, and gave it to them after the game. Of course, they were my best friend by that point, because they knew what had happened.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That was a fun story.
All right, speaking of Notre Dame baseball, wanted to give you a chance real quick. Doc Maneri, the father of former Notre Dame baseball coach Paul Maneri, who you've talked about on this show, recruited you to come to Notre Dame to play baseball and football. Doc Maneri died earlier this week at the age of 90. And as Darren and I were talking the other day, he was in the Baseball Hall of Fame, won a junior college national championship, great family man as well. Any Doc stories that you can tell.
Well, first off, just to the Mineri family, obviously our thoughts and prayers go out. But he just, you know, a top-notch guy, a great baseball person. But he actually gave me a Miami-Dade hat that
really?
I had for a long time. So, you know, that was something that was pretty special that he gave me. And really the whole Mineri family. I mean, they're great people.
Yep. Great. I mean, and both father and son in the Hall of Fame.
It's pretty cool.
Baseball-wise. And Doc had been in kind of steadily declining health over the last mm-hmm. few years, obviously. But just a great guy and someone that I'm sure being around you guys got to talk a lot of baseball with him over the years as well.
Definitely left a lasting impression on, you know, anybody that he was involved with.
Absolutely. We want to thank Five Star Dive Bar, as always. Again, we won't be here. We won't have a show next week because the NCAA tournament, Thursday and Friday, you'll hear wall-to-wall NCAA tournament baseball for Five Star Beef O'Brady's, a Reliable Roofing as well. For Evan Sharpley, Sean Stiers, 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader.